And now it's time for our weekly theater review with our theater critic, Jaywin Russick. Judy, good to see you.
Good to be here, Tom.
So a little bit later, I want to talk about a really disturbing incident that happened at the Hippodrome Theater last night, a performance of Fiddler on the Roof. Somebody during intermission went to the balcony and started yelling, Heil Hitler, Heil Trump. I want to talk about that in a little bit. But first, let's talk about a show that is at the National Theater over in D.C. This is a premiere, and it's based on Tim Burton's 1988 movie Beetlejuice, which, of course, is a big cult favorite. Are you part of that cult, by the way?
I'm not. Not part of that cult, Tom. I had never seen the movie all the way through. I watched it all the way through before I saw the show. People who are in that cult were very much in evidence on opening night. There were women wearing black and white striped Beetlejuice sweaters and blouses. There were two grown men in the audience in Beetlejuice-inspired sport coats. I have to say I found the movie very slight and very silly, but that gives the musical a lot of room to improve, and I think this show does do that. The movie focused on a young couple who live in a wonderful old house, and they die in an accident, but they remain in the house as ghosts. The movie was about them trying to get the house back from the tasteless new owners. The musical, which has a script by Scott Brown and Anthony King, turns the focus to the new owner's daughter, Lydia. The show actually opens at the funeral of Lydia's mother. In the movie, Lydia is just this goth teen. You don't really know why. Now, instead of just being about a couple losing their house, the musical is about a teenager coping with losing her mother. So there's a lot more heart, and there's a lot more at stake. Of course, there's also Beetlejuice himself, the nasty ghost that even other ghosts don't want to have anything to do with. But in this musical, Lydia shares top billing.
All right, so the focus has changed a little bit, but how about the rest of it? Does the musical stick pretty closely to the movie in other respects?
Well, the movie fans will certainly find a lot that's familiar. The emphasis on Lydia is, as I said, quite different, but there are also some small differences I should mention. In the movie, a lot of the action actually takes place in a train garden, a replica of the town that's been built by the dead husband. And the way that he and his wife die is different. We learn the identity of Beetlejuice's mother in the musical. So those are slight differences, but fans are also going to recognize lots of details, some just in passing, some things have been tweaked, some things have been augmented. In the movie, at a dinner party, shrimp cocktail comes alive and starts grabbing the dinner guests. And it does that here, too, but there's also a very randy roast pig that comes alive. And, of course, the musical, it's a musical, it adds songs. These songs are by Eddie Perfect, an Australian singer-songwriter. It has a pop score. He's written some catchy tunes, especially for Lydia. They weren't able to give us any of them to play on the air, but the show does keep two songs from the movie. And I brought a song that will be very familiar to any movie fan, any Beetlejuice fan. It's used in the same place as it is in the movie, at the haunted dinner party that I described. And what you're going to hear is the Harry Belafonte version of the song as it was used in the movie. In the stage show, it's sung by the cast.
Yeah. She's a day, oh.
We might come and we won't go home.
Day. She's a day, she's a day, she's a day.
We might come and we won't go home.
A beautiful bunch, a ripe banana.
We might come and we won't go home.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
We might come and we won't go home.
No one should do that to Harry Belafonte. The Banana Boat Song, that's from the movie of Beetlejuice. So, Judy, the movie, of course, had Michael Keaton and a very young Winona Ryder. So tell us about the performances here in the musical.
Well, I'll start with the title character, here played by Alex Brightman, and he plays him much more John Belushi than Michael Keaton. You could say that he has created his own larger-than-life, or actually maybe I should say larger-than-death, Beetlejuice. He has a very gravelly voice. Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice tried to insinuate himself into the world of the living. Alex Brightman comes on more of like a battering ram. He makes his entrance popping up from the orchestra pit. He later pops up from a casket. The first number after intermission has 8 Beetlejuices. So this is Beetlejuice's show still, but it's not only his. Sophie Ann Caruso is the actress who plays Lydia, and she really holds her own. Her Lydia is a blonde-haired teen in a black dress. The script lifts a line from the movie. It lifts several, but this one in particular. Lydia says, I myself am strange and unusual. But this Lydia is not just weird, she's also very smart. And she has a couple big rock numbers, one about her dead mom, and Sophie Ann Caruso can really belt those numbers. When she sees the ghosts of the couple that owned the house, she thinks that her mother sent them. As I said, she's the heart of the show. The direction's by Alex Timbers. He's a very imaginative director. He and the writers understand what makes something theatrical instead of just putting a movie on stage.
So at the beginning, we talked about how Beetlejuice was originally a movie by Tim Burton. He's the master of special effects. What are the effects like in the stage production?
Well, this is very early Tim Burton, but it still has a distinct look. The set designer here is David Korins. He did the set for Hamilton. And he honors Tim Burton's style, but he kind of builds on it, too. The interior of the house has slanted walls, kind of like the cabinet of Dr. Caligari. The interior gets some makeovers. There are lots of special effects, some of which on opening night still needed some polish. There are lots of designers involved. There's a monster sandworm that made a big impact in the movie. Here it's this ginormous puppet. One side of the stage has the sandworm's head. The tail is on the other side of the stage. There are cameos from some of the movie's most bizarre creatures, a ghost with a shrunken head, a creature with eyeballs on the back of its tongue. And as if all of that is not enough, the musical adds a close harmony boy group called Boy Inferno, and Beetlejuice hosts a game show called Life or Death. It becomes a little too much of a muchness, if you know
what
I mean.
There you go. So this is a rare Broadway tryout in our area. This is at the National over in Washington. What do you think? Does it have a chance in New York?
I think it could have a chance. It feels very commercial. It begins performances on Broadway at the end of March. To go back to where we started, Beetlejuice does have a cult following, not just from the movie. There was an animated TV series in the late 80s. The team behind it has 4 months to fine-tune it, maybe trim some of that muchness. More than in the movie, I think with live people in front of you on stage, it's very important that you care about the characters, and I really cared about young Lydia.
One thing we should also care about is a horrible incident that happened last night at the Hippodrome Theater. Rich Scher, who's a writer for the Baltimore Sun, reports to Christina Chechik that a man during intermission of a performance of Fiddler on the Roof, of course, one of the great Jewish musicals of all time, started yelling, Heil Hitler, Heil Trump. People at the time thought perhaps this was going to be a precursor to a shooting. It was not. He was escorted out of the building. A police spokeswoman tells the Sun that the man was not arrested. That's got a lot of people shaking in their heads. But you actually saw this production, but you were not there last night.
I saw
it
on Tuesday, but Tom, my stepdaughter Julie was there last night, mm-hmm. and she said that the yelling started. The audience was trying to yell him down. She was seated in the orchestra, but in the balcony there was quite a scuffle, and she didn't know what it was about at first, but and then had to decide whether to come back after intermission. Apparently most theatergoers do. The scene right before intermission is a scene of Russian soldiers breaking up, storming the wedding one of Tevye's daughters. And one of his first lines when he comes back right after intermission is, how could this happen? And she said she, and she's sure other people in the audience, thought he was referring to what had just happened in the theater. She said she had a great deal of trouble concentrating on the second act. It's a very frightening thing, and this production is a 2015 production. Of course, this is a play that came out in the 1960s.
Yeah, been
the fact that the persecution of Jews in this, the persecution and bigotry and anti-Semitism is now rearing its head again. Bartlett Scher directed this production, and he uses a framing device of a man in a modern-day parka. He's there at the beginning, he's there at the end. But especially with what just happened, you certainly don't need that to feel the relevance of Fiddler on the Roof and what we are going through now.
Yeah, and I've heard really good things from other folks who were there. They thought this production was great. So, you know, but it was a terrible incident last night at the theater as well. There was an incident of racial bias and anti-Semitism at Goucher College yesterday. So these problems are not by any chance things of the past. Well, Judy, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Tom.
And next week we're off because it's Thanksgiving. But the week after that, we're going to be at the Olney Theater Center. What are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about another movie made into a musical, Elf.
Elf. All right. Well, we look forward to that. And by the way, if you want to catch Beetlejuice, it's at the National Theater until Sunday. And we've got information about tickets and all that stuff at WIPR.org/ Midday. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, the Midday News Wrap. We're going to talk about the proposed Brexit deal, as well as some of the big local stories. Plus, the Pulitzer Prize-winning Irish poet and lyricist Paul Muldoon joins us ahead of his performance Saturday night with the band Rogue Oliphant at the Creative Alliance in Baltimore. It'll be fun talking with Paul again tomorrow. On Midday, we'll also be joined by Frank Langfitt of NPR and Ian Duncan of The Sun for the News Wrap. Lunch today was provided by Eddie's of Roland Park, Baltimore's gourmet grocer since 1944. Eddie's of Roland Park offers a selection of local gift baskets and Maryland jumbo lump crab cakes that can be shipped anywhere throughout the United States. Details online at eddiesofrolandpark.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day.